Hello, friends. Grab your songwriting notebook and your beach cleanup kit. You're listening to Blame It on Buffett.
Well, I sailed from Lauderdale down to Key Largo. Cross the Gulf on a fast sloop, and I sailed the Abacos. As a kid, I read Contiki, and now all the pirate books too. There's just so many places on my list to see. I'm going crazy just trying to choose.
Welcome to Blame It on Buffett. I'm your host, Aaliyah Moore. One of my listeners was like, hey, you should say your name on the podcast because people maybe didn't listen to the first episode ever, which is like maybe the only episode where I introduced myself. So that was a good point, Bryce. Thank you for pointing that out. I'll try to remember to start saying my name when I introduce the podcast every time so that people know who I am. So I'm Aaliyah, and I am the creator and host of Blame It on Buffett. And that's probably all you need to know about me. If you want to know more, you can listen to the first couple episodes. I sort of do longer introductions where I talk about me and my love of Jimmy Buffett and all of that kind of thing. But yes, thank you, Bryce. I will try to start saying my name for new people so that they know who I am. This week we have Michael Eric, who is a fairly new to the scene trop rock musician. So we're going to get to the interview with him in just a minute. I just wanted to do a little bit of housekeeping. I wanted to say thank you so much again to my supporters, people who are financially supporting the podcast. Really, really appreciate it. And I have gotten some stickers, Blame It on Buffett stickers, and those are in the mail to you. You know who you are. So you should be expecting those fairly soon, in the next few days, I guess, depending on how long the mail takes to reach wherever you are. For anybody else, if you are interested in supporting the podcast, you can go to the link for Anchor, and there is a support button, or if you want to, that's sort of a monthly support, kind of like the way Patreon works. If you don't want to do the monthly thing, but would like to send something to support the podcast, I also have my PayPal in the show notes. Once again, this is totally not obligatory. The podcast is free to listen to. I just really appreciate people that are that money's going toward helping me make the podcast better, getting equipment, that kind of thing. And also, I will be donating a portion to an ocean-related charity at the beginning of the month. I think I maybe do a different charity every month. So at the beginning of this next coming month, September, I'll be doing like everything that I've gotten up until then. I'll donate a percentage of it to a charity, and I'll announce that at that time. And so it'll be kind of like at the end of the month, instead of saying like, oh, this month, well, I don't know. I should have thought about this before. I was just talking about it on the podcast. if you would rather know what charity your money is going to before you support, so like say it at the beginning of the month, or just I will announce whatever it is at the end of the month, and then that's what everything will have gone to. So if you have thoughts or preferences about that, let me know. You can email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com or message me at blamebuffettpod on Twitter and Instagram and or on Facebook. Just Blame It on Buffett. So yeah, let me know what you think about that, if you have opinions. But I do, it is, and you'll hear more about this in today's episode, but it is important to me to take a little bit of what you're giving to me, you're supporting me, to then support causes that are important to me, close to my heart, because that is what Parrotheads do, and that's a big part of the Parrothead Club. So thank you, everyone. And even people who are just listening and liking it, and if you leave me comments or whatever, that's amazing, and that's all I really need. So I really appreciate all of you. And I think that is about it. I'm not going to do a Jimmy Buffett story this time, song story this time, just because I don't want the episode to be too long. So, but I'll try to come back with another one of those for the next episode. So yeah, here is the interview with Michael Eric. All right. Welcome to this week's interview for Blame It on Buffett. My guest this week is Michael Eric, who is a fairly new trop rocker on the scene. You started just a couple years ago, right?
That is right. I am I'm 54 years young, Aaliyah. I've been doing this for four whole years.
Wow. I mean, that's, I feel like it seems like a lot of trop rock musicians start, it's kind of like a secondary, I mean, like some of them have been musicians their whole life or whatever, but like, I feel like a lot of them that I've talked to sort of, it's like this sort of their second phase of life where they kind of got into doing that either full-time or as a side thing along with whatever other job they might have. So I don't think you are alone in that group of people there.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of gray hair among some of the more, you know, well-known trop rock artists. And I know there's some younger guys and gals coming up as well. But, you know, I mean, it's I think that's the there's a lesson in life about that. I mean, you're a young person, and I've got a 24-year-old daughter who laments the fact that she's getting older.
Oh yes. And I'm 10 years older than her. So that really makes me feel great.
Right. But, you know, I mean, I think that why not, you know, start something completely new that you've never done before at 50 years old. Why not?
Definitely. And I think it's great to have, for trop rock as a genre, to have that sort of like injection of new blood, and whether that is like a young, I mean, it is good to have young people too, but I think even if it's not super young people, if they're, you know, just new to the scene and bringing something new and fresh to the genre, that's always a plus for sure. How did you sort of get started doing music?
Right. Well, I have never really done music.
Oh, that's right. Because you're a little bit different than some of the other musicians.
I think I'm a lot different. But yeah, and I would just say, you know, about age, I think there's something to be said for, you know, your chronological age, which is, you know, something that you can't do anything about. And, you know, sort of being young at heart. I mean, if I'm around a group of people and there's little kids and you can't find me, I'll be over with the little kids. So, I feel like I may be young at heart for the rest of my life, but, I have a PhD, in biology and, a master's degree in environmental science. And I worked really professionally in conservation,
And we'll definitely talk more about that.
So later. Yeah, I played the trumpet in junior high, and I'm a whistler. I have a lot of I make a lot of appearances on my you know, records whistling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really
don't have instruments or anything.
No, ma'am.
Yeah. So how did you, as someone who doesn't really play instruments except for the trumpet in middle school. I also only played the violin in middle school, and then now I'm trying to learn the ukulele. So that's, it's hard when you haven't done it for a long time, but how did you, you know, what happened that made you be like, well, I'm going to write songs? Because I feel like for most people, the natural thing is like, well, I'm already a musician of some kind.
No.
I already play instruments. But that's not how it happened for you. So what inspired you?
Well, way back in March of 2016, out of the blue, I had a dream that I met with Jimmy Buffett, who I've never met, but whose music I've listened to. But I had a dream that I flew down to Key West and met with Jimmy Buffett and pitched him some song ideas. And he said, you know, he told me to go for it. So, you know, when Jimmy Buffett tells you to go for it,
that's right.
So I woke up And I wrote down some version of the song titles that I could remember. But then, you know, I'd never written, not only did I not play an instrument, I'd never written a song before. So I didn't really do anything with that sheet of paper or that dream until a couple months later. I did have some younger people that I knew and worked with who were sort of doing music. And I was sort of mentioning this dream to a few people. But it wasn't until about May when I Googled how to write a song.
I mean, you gotta start somewhere, right?
Because that's what you do, right? Anymore when you don't know how to do something. So I Googled how to write a song, and you know, I don't know, it was probably a YouTube video, or I watched one of the, or I read one of those how-to articles, and they were making it sound really difficult and painful.
Oh, well.
And you know, I thought, well, geez, it can't be that hard. And I've certainly listened to a lot of songs. So I had some stories to tell, and they started at first, they sort of started to just sort of leak out. And then they just sort of, you know, the hole in the boat got bigger, and it really started, they started coming pretty fast and furious. And, you know, I mean, some of the first songs weren't, you know, number ones, but, you know, like anything, you do something and you get a little bit better. And some of those early songs, there's a couple of them that are, you know, still a couple of my favorites, actually.
Well, how do you, so you write the words and stuff, but then you also sort of come up, even though you don't have an instrument, you kind of come up with like how the melody is going to go,
right?
Just like kind of singing it to yourself or something. So you do have an idea of what you want the melody to be, right?
Right. So, again, at first, I mean, I have written my whole life, and I've written for sort of pleasure, and I've written, you know, in different formats. So I'm pretty comfortable writing, and I take words pretty seriously, and I like to tell stories. So the whole challenge, I think, of telling a big story in 250 words was, you know, immediately became, you know, pretty attractive to me. So, and again, you know, your basic song structure is a verse and a chorus and a second verse and a chorus and a bridge and a chorus, and you're out. So, you know, you sort of, it's the beginning, middle, and end of a story. So, you know, I mean, have you ever tried to write a song?
Yes, I actually have. Yes.
Right.
When I was trying to, actually what happened was kind of similar to what happened for you, is that my friend and I were in Key West, and we came up with this story about chicken, like why the chickens are in Key West. Cause we didn't really know.
Right.
But so we, instead of like actually trying to find out the real reason, we just like made up this, our own story about it. And we were like, that would be a great song. Cause at the time I was like, it was like the first time I tried to start playing ukulele, which was like 4 years ago or something.
Right. Which this sounds like the song idea sounds like a perfect song for a ukulele. It just really seems.
Yeah. So that was kind of the same thing where I was like, this would be a great song. And we made up the story. And then, so I kind of wrote it down, and it's a song.
Right.
But I'm, yeah, kind of in the same boat of like where I can play ukulele, like I'm, you know, getting better, but I'm definitely not like a musical, very musical person. So.
Well, I would say, I mean, it does seem sort of magical from the outside looking in. I mean, it is sort of strange that you can sort of have an idea, and the words sort of come to you in a way that, you know, will make sense on paper in a song. And then you just sort of, you do almost sort of hear a melody. You know, when you, you know, as you're sort of maybe saying it, I mean, you know, I wrote a song for you, you know,
yes.
That.
Yes.
And, so a lot of times it starts with a hook. Like I think I know that one of your favorite Jimmy Buffett songs is, what is it? Tell me.
Something so feminine about a mandolin.
Mandolin, right. And so that, and you, I listened to one of your podcasts and I got a little bit of your backstory. And, you know, sometimes the hook comes to you first. Sometimes just a line or two. And then once you sort of get that and once you get the story, then it all sort of flows. So the first line of this song that I wrote for you. So you were a parrot head in high school. Is that a true statement?
I mean, yeah, I have been one since I was conscious, since I have conscious memory.
That's true. Yes. That's true. Well,
so earlier than high school. But yeah.
That's right. I knew that. But, you know, you take a little artistic license. So
right, yeah,
because, because you had to be sort of old enough to drop out of college.
Right.
So.
Which I did not do for my parents. Who are listening to this. They're not
but
listening.
You also read. You also read Jimmy Buffett's A Salty Piece of Land, right? When you were a freshman in college.
Yes.
And so this is all making sense to me, you know, in my head. Okay, you got this young girl, you know, young woman, and she likes Jimmy Buffett, but then she reads a book, and it really sort of sets her on her – it ruins her for the rest of her life. You know what I mean? In a way.
Yes.
Right? And so – So I had this story, and then Aaliyah dreams of the ocean is the first line of the chorus. She wishes she was sailing again, and it all sort of goes from there. So you, as you write this stuff down, you know, you sort of play around with different ways to sort of possibly sing, you know, the chorus and how the verse might go. And then once something sort of sticks in your head, you know what you do? You get your phone out and you go to your voice memo. And you sing it into your voice memo.
Yeah, because especially for me, I would not remember. Like if I have an idea about something, I have to write it down or like make a note in my phone or yeah, record it if it's something like
no, because
audio.
These things do. I mean, they do. They come out of thin air, and if you don't catch them, you know, they can disappear. So, So I'll sing it. And sing it, and it evolves. And then within usually a day, because I get sort of obsessed with, like sometimes I'll hear something that I think is might be a good hook for a song, and it doesn't go anywhere. Mm. And it sort of stinks because it sounds like it could be such a good hook, but I can't fall in love with the story. But if you know, a good song can come pretty quick and then you just sort of become, like I said, I become obsessed with it. So within a day usually or two, I have pretty much the whole song worked out and sung into my voice memo. And what I'll do then is I have a musician friend who has a recording studio at his house. And he's the guy that I went to initially with my stack of lyric sheets back in, you know, the summer of 2016. But I'll go to him then with this idea for the song. I'll play it for him. He'll tell me what key it's in. We'll figure out how many beats per minute it's going to be. And then we start turning it into, you know, putting music on it and turn it into a song.
Right. And so you have music that you've produced. You have an album that just recently came out. It's called Mile Zero.
Yes.
So to turn it into an album, does he do all the recording for you, or once you and he have a good idea, do you go somewhere else to actually like record the final tracks?
Right. So when I went, so this person's name is, drum roll please, it's an awesome name, Shaddy Frick. Shaddy Ooh. Frick. I know. Shaddy Frick. And so back in I guess it was August of 2016. So I have this, you know, I have my Jimmy Buffett dream in March. I start writing songs in May. And by August, I've got sort of a growing stack of lyric sheets. You know, I've got, I don't know, a dozen songs or more. So, but I don't know what to do with them because I can't play an instrument and I don't have recording equipment. So I knew Shaddy from, you know, just, I knew Shaddy. And, I went to his house and I said, man, Shaddy, I got these, you know, these songs I've been writing. What can I do with them? So, and he's in, you know, 10 different bands, and he's a genius. And he looked
sounds like a good friend to have.
I know, right? Thank gosh, I'd still be writing songs if it wasn't for him. So he picks out Boat Dreams, which actually Boat Dreams was the first song that I released as a single back in December of 2018. So he picks out, but when I love that song, and that was one of the first songs I actually, you know, wrote. It's sort of the story of a guy who sort of dreams of selling everything and, you know, living on a boat, but his wife is not so keen on the idea. Which a lot of people can probably relate to, but, or our husband, you know,
it's the opposite in my case. I'm the exactly. one that wants to live.
They're like, why would you want to do that? My wife. So actually when I first had the idea for the song, my son was probably about, how old was he? 12 or I don't even know. It might have been – I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I remember I went to him, and he was younger. He's maybe like 10, and I go, James, what do you think about the idea of, like, just selling everything and going to live on a boat? And he goes, I think that sounds sort of poorish, which is – I don't know what that means exactly. But anyways, I was the only one in my household who had that fantasy. But
right.
But it is not an uncommon fantasy, and I'm not convinced that one day I won't sort of actually do it. But so Shaddy picked out Boat Dreams out of that stack of lyric sheets, and he just said, well, do you want to just lay down a demo today? And I'm like, I don't play this, but I had never actually sung anything, I mean, other than in the shower. So we just, you know, sometimes it's the best way to do it, I think. Like, I didn't have much time to think about it. So,
right, just go for it.
Yeah. So he's like, well, what do you think it sounds like? So I played him, you know, a version of it. And, you know, eventually I will have a band, and I'm going to call that band the Misfit Pirates.
That's a good name.
That's my plan. But until then, Shaddy is the Misfit Pirate. Because, you know, the way you would do this and the way you can do this is he'll lay down like just a basic piano, you know, basics and chord structure, you know, doink, 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 like that. And then he'll put a bass, you know, on it. And then he'll put some drums on it. And before you know it, you got about, you know, 3 or 4 tracks. And it's ready to put a vocal on. And so he went through that process. And about an hour later, you know, I'm all mic'd up, and I'm, and he's like, well, now don't be nervous. And, you know, I was too dumb to be nervous. So I just knocked it out. And he's like, hey, he says, you have a pretty good voice. And I go, well, thank you. like I've said, the rest is sort of history. So, that's the way it happened. So after we did that, then we did another song called, Shacks on the Beach. I don't know if you've heard that, but, I released that as a single, in, I don't know, you know, early 2017. And then we spent about a year or more, you know, working on songs. You know, we might've had a little beginner's luck. But like you said, how do you end up with a CD? So, you know, you record some songs, and some of them don't really work out, and some of them do. And, you know, before you know it, you've got 10 songs, and, you take a couple shots of liquid courage or something, and you decide. I mean, in the end, you know, the scary thing is putting it out there.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure when,
like,
you started,
what are people going to think, and like, yeah, what, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, even when you started this podcast, I mean, it was probably a little scary, right?
Yeah. I mean, people don't, actually, I think I sort of proved myself wrong in this because I do have people that listen to this podcast. But like when I started it, I was like, it doesn't matter because no one's going to really listen to it, you know?
Right.
So that helped me like be less nervous about it. And I had done other podcasts before with my husband. So, but definitely like the hardest part for me is, and it's gotten easier the more I do the podcast, but like, especially once I started doing online interviews like this, I was doing interviews with people I didn't know and had never met, like you, for example. And, and that's hard for me cause I'm kind of an introvert a little bit and it's hard, a little hard for me to like meet new people. So it kind of helped me get outside of my comfort zone, forcing myself to do this. So that's probably the part that makes me the most nervous. So I could definitely relate still.
Well, have you seen, I would be willing to bet that you have, but have you seen the trap rock, you know, the indie trap rock movie Chasing the Sun?
Yes, I have seen it. And not for a while though. I feel like I need to rewatch it because it has been a minute for sure since I saw it. So
well, I watched it and I thought it was awesome. I had no idea what to expect and I really loved it. But so Captain Bob, you know, Captain Bob had that same, it's Captain Bob, right? He's the radio personality, right? I think it is. Yeah. Captain Bob, and he's
the worst
on
memory.
He's on something island, something like Coconut Island or something. But he was really nervous about interviewing people, if you remember. And then the girl that he meets down in the Keys, you know, hooks him up with these artists, and he finds out that these artists are really real interested in talking, you know, and you know, pretty easy interviews. So you're probably finding that though too, right? I got, because you've interviewed some pretty impressive names. That's why I'm like, so I'm honored to be on this thing. Jesus.
Oh, well, thank you. That's, I feel like, I don't know. It doesn't, I thank you. I appreciate that.
You really have.
And I was lucky in that, like, a lot of the people that I have interviewed, musicians especially, I did know before. Just from like meeting them at house concerts and trap rock events. So that kind of helped me approach people, right? Be like, hey, you already know who I am. So like, do you want to be on this podcast? But, and I've said this on other episodes. So sorry, anyone listening for repeating myself, but it definitely, one of the things I was most surprised by was that I did not have to really work to get guests. After the first like few episodes, I either had people approaching me and being like, hey, can I be on your podcast? Like, and we can talk and it'll be rad. Or people who were on the podcast were like, hey, I know someone else that should be on the podcast and let me introduce you to them. So that part came a lot easier than I was expecting pretty quickly for sure.
Right. So it's, you know, it's a little bit scary, but I'll tell you what, and I want to, so I started an Instagram site or page or, and, I made a post, like my first post said something like getting ready to release, you know, boat dreams tomorrow or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, this guy who goes by Mr. Nevermind, you know, he's Tiki Pod
yes.
Radio, and he's got a really, there's his last name's got lots of, consonants and two Y's and a Z. But you know, he goes by Mr. Nevermind. And so he reached out to me, and said, hey, I'd be interested in hearing your music. And that was just so important. You know what I mean? Like to get just a little bit of moral support early on, because you're already
someone that like clearly knows a lot about the genre and everything, you know, because they like have a radio station.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other, just the crazy awesome thing about this whole genre is all of this great, these great internet radio stations, if that's what you call them, you know, that play this music. So, you know, you do, as just a guy in Carbondale, Illinois, who's writing, you know, songs about the sailing and islands, you know, you can get your songs to some people and they'll get them out there. And at some level, you know, that's all I want, you know.
Yeah.
That's all anybody wants. You know, I've got stories to tell And, you know, if you know, I'm glad that there's an audience. But so Mr. Nevermind reached out to me, which gave me a lot of confidence. And then I had I, you know, struggle a little bit with self-confidence.
As we all do. I think most people who aren't egomaniacs.
Well, you know, there's
a struggle with self-confidence.
There's this great meme, you know, that I've seen about creativity. You know, it says like, there's like the 8 stages of creativity, like stage one, this is great. You know, stage two, this is greater than great. Stage three, I'm not sure. Stage four, this stinks. Stage five, I suck, you know? So you go through these, you know, then you come back out of the valley. But, you know, yeah, I mean, if you've ever, you know, just listen to your songs enough and you're going to go through all those stages of, you know, this is great to I hate it. And you'll be back to I think this is great. But I had the courage to send Boat Dreams to Eric Babin.
From Radio Trap Rock.
From Radio Trap Rock, who you, Eric, you also talked with Eric and Gina, I think.
Yes, I had them on. Well. It feels like forever ago now. I don't know. Like, it wasn't that long ago, maybe like a month or two. But but yeah, that is an episode. If people haven't listened to that, they can go back and check that one out.
Right. And these, you know, and there's a lot of people who are, oh, you know, sort of involved in charting the course for trap rock these days. But, you know, Eric and Gina are definitely two of those people who are really, you know, they're sort of at the middle of it all and you know, a lot of stuff. So, but I'll tell you what, you know how, like, you get a card or a letter from somebody and you keep it like as a keepsake because it just means so much to you. So I sent Eric, you know, I nervously hit send, you know, on this email, and I, you know, you proofread it like 8 times to make sure, you know, you said everything right and you got everything right. And, I mean, it didn't take long for him to reply. And I'm going to read you what he said because it was so, it's short, but it was just so
meaningful to you.
Yes. And encouraging. So he says, Mike, I like it. So this is specific to Boat Dreams. I've added it to our regular rotation. And he says, just so you know, we are very particular on what we put on Radio Trap Rock. We are not a station that plays everything that's submitted. We only accept for airplay about 1 in 5 songs that are sent in. Thank you for sending us good music. And I mean, I was on cloud nine. I mean, I'm a 50-year-old man, and I think I was, you know, I felt like a, I don't know, a little kid on Christmas. So,
and that's true, because when they were on the podcast with me,
yeah.
They did say, like, they weren't just saying that to make you feel good. Like, when I interviewed them, they said, like, we are pretty particular about what songs we choose, and they have to be well produced, you know, they have to be well written. And so that wasn't a lie.
No, it wasn't. And they even said on your podcast, I think it was even like 1 in 10 or something. I mean, he was really, you know, and of course there's more and more people that are doing this, I think, right. You know,
And there's a difference, like, if you have a song, like, you know, yours is essentially professionally produced, like, you have a really good musician helping you produce your songs versus somebody who just, like, records the song on their phone and sends it in or something, you know? So I think that probably makes a really big difference as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's definitely some songs out there, you know, that are, you hear on some of these, you know, stations, you're like, you know. But that are better than others. Some songs are better than others. You know, some, yeah, exactly. Some songs are better than others. But so again, thankfully, you know, I got that early, you know, validation and support. And Boat Dreams actually made it to like number 4 on, you know, Tiki Pod's Island Heat Top 20. And then Shacks on the Beach came out, and that made it to number 3, I think. So, I mean, I was really, you know, they like it, you know, they really like it, you know? So Mile Zero then, it was a couple of years though, because, Shacks on the Beach topped at number 3, like in March of 2019. Yeah. So, you know, and Mile Zero, which is my CD, which has got 10 tracks on it. Neither Boat Dreams, you know, they're 10 original tracks. I mean, Boat Dreams or Shacks on the Beach aren't on there, but yeah, it took a year because I had a CD ready to go, sort of called Boat Dreams, and then I just got in a really creative place and wrote, you know, a couple, two or three songs that I really liked and wanted them on the CD. So it took another year to get, you know, to actually get Mile Zero out there, which is 10, you know, 10 songs. Yeah.
But it's out there now. And where can people listen to it if they want to listen?
Well, I mean, you can do the basic sort of, you know, Google it and Mile Zero, Michael Eric. There's sort of a website. I mean, I don't have michaeleric.com, but first of all, I have an Instagram, you know, page at Michael Eric Music. And if you go there, you can click on a link to a website called misfitpirate.hearnow, as in hearnow.com. And if you click on that, it'll take you to basically it's sort of like a one page website for the CD. And you can actually click on all the songs and listen to them in their entirety, or you can go to iTunes or, you know, Apple and Spotify and download them and put them on your playlist or whatever. So,
cool.
Yeah.
And then is the long sort of going forward, like you said, you're going to try and get a band. So, once you have a band, is sort of the long-term goal to actually be able to play shows in person, or are you going to stick more to just recording and putting out music that way?
Right. So, you're talking about trying to play the ukulele. Right. I mean,
you could just sing. Like, if you have a band, you don't have to play an instrument. No. You could just be the singer. So
I know. And, I know, believe me. I mean, I've tried to learn to play the guitar twice in my life. Once I was like 12, and that, you know, I mean, that just was a little too hard. And then a couple of years ago, you know, I'm like, okay, now I'm motivated. I'm writing these songs. You know, I should be able to learn how to play my songs. I mean, if you're going to be motivated, you should be motivated. And geez, Louise, it just, you know, I feel like playing guitar is magical. I mean, I don't understand how you know where to put your fingers. I mean, it's just beyond confusing to me. Literally last night, I was looking at YouTube videos for like how to play the harmonica. Because
harmonica,
I thought,
is hard. Like, it is much harder than you would think is, based on the fact that you just blow into a, like, some holes.
exhale, inhale. So
I recommend ukulele. It only has 4 strings. The chord, like, basic chords are pretty easy to learn.
Yeah.
If I can learn how to play it, I think pretty much anybody can. I mean, not that I'm great yet, but I'm getting there.
Well, Linda Robb, when I was doing the interview with Dennis King on his Island Time radio show last week, I guess. And his sort of co-host, Linda Robb, asked me, she said, well, you know, are you thinking about trying to learn how to play an instrument so that you can, you know, maybe do house parties? And you know, it's a lot easier to travel, you know, as a one person band as opposed to, you know, like a big group. And here's where I'm at with this, Aaliyah. I feel like I said, geez, you know, I mean, I'm not giving up on the idea that I might learn how to play guitar, but I'm going to rationalize not learning right now by saying, like, maybe if I was, you know, focused on trying to learn the guitar, then like all these songs wouldn't be coming out of me. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So, well, and I'm not saying that like you should have to do that. Like, I think if you're just, the music that you make is just like on CD or whatever, and you're not trying to do it as a job. Like, I think a lot of the musicians that like go around and do house concerts and that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, they're, you know, a lot of them, some of them have other jobs too, but a lot of them are like, that's their job and they're trying to, and I think, you know, that having that additional income stream in addition to selling you know, your songs or your CD or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, if you're just doing it for fun, like, I don't think there's any reason why you can't just sort of like put out songs on CD. I don't think there's any rule that says you have to play music in person anywhere.
Well, I watch actually Donnie. I watch like on FaceTime Live or something or whatever, Facebook Live, a concert that like a house concert that Donnie Brewer just recently did. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that guy is so good at being a one man, you know, show. Yes. It's unbelievable.
He is very talented at pretty much everything. Yeah. He also produces music and does video editing. Like, he does all the things.
Right. So I watch that and I'm like, why would anybody, like my wife, I think my wife is really pretty. And sometimes, you know, I wonder, like, why would she pick me? Oh. I mean, you know, why did she pick me? And I mean, I'm sure I have some redeeming qualities, but
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, a few maybe. But like, I just I watched that Donnie Brewer, you know, show, and I thought, why would I even try to do something? Because that guy's so good. So I think that I actually wrote down, Aaliyah, what my goals are.
Tell me your goals.
I think you're supposed to do that, right? Every few years.
No, yeah. You're supposed to put them out into the universe.
Smart goals, right?
Achievable. Actually, the only reason that I, like, I posted, sorry, this is a small tangent, but I posted a video of myself playing ukulele and singing on Facebook and singing my song that I wrote, which is, ooh, like, I wasn't good at any of those things. Like, I'm not good at ukulele. I'm not good at singing. The song's fine, but like, and I've gotten a little better at ukulele since I posted that. But like, the reason I did that was because I was like, this is like for accountability. Like, it's not so I can be like, hey, look how great I am, because I'm not great. But it's like, if I put this out there, like, people will know that I'm doing it, and then I'll have a harder time giving up when it gets hard, because like, my friends will know and they'll like ask me about it and stuff. So I feel like putting your goals out there so that other people know about it helps you not give up on them, if that makes sense.
Oh, I agree. Now listen, I'm going to circle back a little bit to, and this is related to my goals, but I will circle back to post Jimmy Buffett dream, you know, and I mean, obviously everything is post Jimmy Buffett dream. I actually had a second Jimmy Buffett dream, which I'll tell you about, you know, a little bit later. But I did go to a couple songwriting workshops in Nashville. So I live in Southern Illinois. So Nashville, Tennessee is only about not even 3 hours from here. And I would just put in a plug. There's a guy named Jason Bloom, and he's with BMI, who's one of the, you know, ASCAP and BMI. These are the people that if you're an artist, you sort of have to be associated with one of those so that you get your royalties and things like that. Anyways, I went to a couple songwriter workshops that were led by this guy, Jason Bloom, and they were really, really useful. And they were sort of depressing. So I'll tell you what I mean by that. So at first I was really nervous. The way these workshops worked were you were supposed to come with a song that you had written, you know, like and ideally it wasn't a lyric sheet. It was some version of a demo, right? Like you could play it live there, and there was like 40 people and everybody brought a song. And basically the way it worked was you just spent the whole day and you'd listen to somebody's song, and this guy would basically, you know, critique it right there on the spot. But you were sort of listening and, you know, taking this all in. So I get there and all these people sort of look like, you know, some of them look like they knew what they were doing. And I just was coming, and I, you know, no one had ever, this was before I had released any songs. So I was afraid that my stuff wasn't gonna be good enough, you know, be up to the standard. So shortly after the first few songs played, I'm like, oh, okay.
You're like, I'm all right. Okay.
You know, I'm okay. I'll be okay.
I mean, anyone who's going to a workshop like that probably isn't like a, you know, professional level songwriter. So
Yeah, right. No, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people out there trying to write songs, that's for sure. Right. And one of the things that was so that was encouraging, that, you know, that my stuff was sort of standing on its own up against a bunch of other aspiring songwriters. Mm-hmm. The thing that was sort of depressing about it, Aaliyah, was like this guy, Jason Blum, was very blunt about, you know, don't think that you're going to be able to probably make any money writing songs. You know what I mean? Right. Because
it's true.
It's true. And he said, maybe, you know, 20, whatever, 30 years ago, there weren't that many people. But nowadays there's just so many songwriters and nobody releases albums anymore, you know, to speak of. I mean, it's all sort of like hit driven, single driven. So, and there's like five people that everybody listens to, you know, I mean, if it's country, it's, you know, one of three people, if it's pop, it's one of three people. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So,
To interject really quickly. I think that's the nice thing about trap rock though, is that like that's not as true as it is for other like bigger genres. Like there's still room for people, and people do release full albums. Like for the most part, people release full albums in trap rock and stuff like that. So like, it's like, yeah, if you're trying to become like a famous country star or whatever, like that's probably not going to happen. But I think there definitely is room. Even though I said there you couldn't make money, I think if you're going to pick a genre, I mean, you're not going to be like a super famous rich person because the genre is so small. But like there's definitely room, you know, to get your stuff out there and get it heard, I think.
Yeah, well, and I agree. And I do think that the whole big club of parrot heads and trap rockers is just, you know, probably is unique among all the, you know, I mean, among all the different genres of, you know, independent music. But so I agree with you. And I mean, really the take home point of the workshops was, you know, just he said, just focus on writing really good songs. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I mean, don't try to write for anybody. Don't try to write a hit. Just write songs that you love. And, you know, you might write a great song. And I think that really resonated with me in the end. And so back now, here are my goals. I wrote this down. So my goals with this, and my son asked me that he went with me to Shaddy Frick's studio. It's called Low Key Studios here in Carbondale. And my son went with me the day that we cut that demo, that Boat Dreams demo. And my son is 18 now, so he was, I don't know, 14 back then. And he goes, Dad, what are you trying to accomplish with this? You know, you're 50 years old. I mean, come on.
Right. And to your kid, you're like 100 years old, right? Like, your kid's so, like, oh my God, you're so old. What are you doing?
I don't even know. But how old I seem to sound. But so in the end, and I've been thinking about this for a few years, and literally, I think knowing that I was going to be talking to you today, I went for a little walk and this popped into my head. But really, I think my goal ultimately is to just write really good songs and make, you know, really good music. And
what more could you ask for? That's a great goal.
Exactly. And you know, and it's cheaper than therapy, you know, I mean, because.
Well, especially if you have a friend that helps you out.
Well, yeah. I mean, the process of, I mean, songs are almost like poems. I mean, they sort of are poems in a type of. And it's really, you know, I mean, I've said this, I couldn't write the songs that I write now when I was 25 years old because, you know, my songs are about falling, you know, in and out of love. I mean, you can write those songs when you're younger, but they have a different you know, when you've been married 20 years, it's a different type of trying to stay in love and stay on the same page as the person you're married to. And, you know, dealing with getting older and trying to make sense of, you know, of things. So, I mean, my songs are sort of like, you know, they're not margaritas and senoritas. I don't sing about that really kind of stuff. I mean, my songs tend to be a little more, I try to tell big stories. So, yeah, it's cheaper than therapy.
Trap rock is very much like a storytelling genre. I mean, I guess like you could say that about a lot of musical genres, but I think trap rock especially is like very focused on, there are a lot of songs that are like hanging out at the beach or whatever, but there's also a lot of songs that are about like things that have happened to people in their lives, or, you know, exaggerated versions of real things that have happened. And I think, like you said, there's the longer you've lived and the more experiences you've had, the more of those songs you can write in a really authentic way.
Right.
And it sounds like, I want to make sure like we talk about like your background and your story a little bit too, because we're getting pretty far in to the podcast. We haven't even touched on the fact that like you've done all these awesome things in your background.
Part two.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I think we could talk about it now. This seems like a pretty good segue.
Yeah.
If you want to go back and, because I know like you did during your, like when you were doing your education, like you did stuff in the Bahamas and you've done a lot of things that seem to like they would lead to good songs. So do you want to go back and talk about sort of go a little further back and talk about kind of like how you got to where you are from, you know, the beginning and like the kinds of things that influenced you to maybe like write songs about now?
Yeah. Well, when I was my master's degree, I went on a field trip to the Bahamas, and it was a 2-week field trip to Andros Island, which is a great place to visit. If you're thinking about a place to try to go when all this craziness is over. I was there for 2 weeks and I just sort of fell in love with the island. One of my favorite lyrics of all time is from a John Denver song. And he says, he talks about, he was, I just drew blank on it, but he came back to a place he'd never been before. You know, this idea that when he got to the mountains, he discovered that he was sort of supposed to be there. And I feel like when I landed on this island, it was like I was supposed to, I mean, that was my place. So I ended up going back to work at this field station and spent about 3 years in the Bahamas, just because I didn't want to leave.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but then when I finally did leave, I thought that it would be easy to get back there. Which is another one of these things that you learn in life. When you're young, you think that, I'll spend a couple years and then I'll just go back to this place and, you know, life gets complicated. So, but I met my wife down there and she's from the Bahamas and,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So in addition to living down there, you know, I'm married to somebody from there and, I have to deal with that, which is, you know, I mean that in a good way. So I sort of live in the Bahamas all the time in, you know, figuratively speaking, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so really, there's this wealth of, people and places to draw on for these songs, you know, that, that makes, you know, I think one of the things that we all love about Jimmy Buffett is his stuff is so authentic, you know?
Right. I mean, yeah, definitely.
He did all that stuff. I mean, he doesn't have to make it up. I mean, he says, you know, there's this, I think it's, Finding Joe Merchant or something. None of these,
Where is Joe Merchant?
Yeah. But I tore out a page from the introduction of that book, and I have it on my bulletin board. Because in the introduction of the book, Jimmy Buffett writes, "I finally realized there was a purpose to my gypsy soul and wanderlust approach to the years I spent on boats and planes crisscrossing the Caribbean. I didn't have to make a lot of this up." So, thank gosh for the Bahamas, because I don't have to make any of this stuff up.
Right. Write about what you know, right? Isn't that
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So one of my songs, you know, there's Jimmy Buffett Dreams. I have a song called Jimmy Buffett Dreams, and there's this, it takes place in this, place. It takes place in a bar called Sammy's Conch Shack. Mm-hmm. And there was one of those, you know, right outside of where I lived, and it was right on Calabash Bay and all these things. Those 3 years and then the subsequent, you know, 25 have been the fodder for my music. You know, unlike you, though, I didn't grow up listening to Jimmy Buffett.
Right. So when did you get into Jimmy Buffett?
Yeah. So the first cassette, Jimmy Buffett cassette that I ever, well, the first Jimmy Buffett music that I ever listened to, that I remember listening to, was his Changes in Latitudes and Changes in Attitudes, mm-hmm. Cassette. And I bought that right after I got back from that 2-week field trip in the Bahamas. And, I had, fallen in love with the place, like I said, and I had made arrangements to go back. So I had a couple months before I went back, and I bought that CD. I just listened to it over every night. I would just listen to it over and over again. I mean, it's like burned. I mean, that whole, those 10 songs are burned into my brain. But then in the Bahamas, I was listening to a lot of gospel music, and, you know, I was listening to sort of jazzy stuff. I had a Pavarotti's Greatest Hits, you know, cassette. I mean, I was just listening to, I had an Al Green cassette, you know, Al Green singing gospel music. And at that time, Paul Simon's Graceland had just come out. So I was listening to this real sort of amalgam of music. And like I said, I want to write good songs, which I think I do. I'm sort of biased, but,
So, I mean, I think if you write songs and then you think that they're bad, like you wouldn't want to like make a CD if you think are bad.
I don't think there are a lot of people who don't like the songs that they release. But I think the music, I take a real pride though in the fact that the music on my songs is interesting. I try to make it interesting, right?
Yeah, so
there's gospel sort of influence, and there's jazz stuff, and there's, you know, there's a lot Zydeco, you know, beats going on. So it's, you know, when I listen to it, or I think when the music comes to me, it's sort of a, you know, a big stew of a lot of that stuff that I was listening to in the Bahamas, in addition to, you know, all the sort of interesting people and places that I, you know, that I saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's kind of true of Jimmy's music too. Like he, you know, some of his albums are like a kind of certain style of music and some are very different style. So it's kind of just like you incorporate, you know, what kinds of music you like and what kind of music you experience and maybe even what kind of music you remember sort of that you tie with certain events that happen in your life. Like if you're writing a song about sort of based on something that happened in your life, it's like, okay, well, you know, what style of music was influential during that time, maybe. So I totally think it makes sense to like, you know, like not every song is just going to be like a steel drum beach song or whatever.
Right. And that's sort of, you know, one of the things that, you know, when you were talking with Bill Bram and you could talk with Eric Babin and things like that. And it sort of gets to that, like, you know, what is a trap rock song, you know, and like, what is it? And Eric Babin will say, right. He says, it's got to have the three B's, right? He says, it's got to have either beaches, bars, or boats. And I think that's probably, you know, that's good. I mean, I think beaches and boats for sure.
Oh, so you do the more Bs, like that album set that Jimmy Buffett put out. You also have ballads as one of the Bs.
Yeah, for sure.
That kind of includes everything else.
Well, I throw in my B is the Bahamas. So we could maybe keep coming up with those. But yeah, no, I think the music has to take you there, and I'm making air quotes. And I think, you know, for me, you know, Jimmy Buffett took us to the Caribbean. And, you know, oftentimes on a sailboat. And even if the song, he definitely at least took us to the coast. You know, and even if the lyrics aren't super islandy, you know, there's something about the music. And the flip side of that is I think that, you know, you give something a reggae beat or you put some steel drums on it and it evokes, you know, islands and beaches and, you know, you can sort of play with it there. So, I think that my favorite Jimmy Buffett songs are definitely the big story songs. You know, like for me, my all-time favorite Jimmy Buffett song, I would say, is Cowboy in the Jungle.
Yeah, that's a great song.
But, you know, some of this melancholy stuff too, Banana Republics, and I mean, even Changes in Latitudes, Changes in Attitudes. I mean, it's sort of making these really poignant statements about, you know, people and the lives that they're living versus the lives that they'd like to live or things that they're trying to run away from. And, you know, he went to Paris. I mean, it's beautiful stuff.
Yeah. That's the thing about Jimmy Buffett is like, he has so much to offer that is a lot more than what the general population who has really only heard Margaritaville thinks that he has to offer, you know?
Because I was thinking, you know, like, I can't think of one. I bet you there is one, but this may be like a listener game. But I mean, is there one Jimmy Buffett song that actually even has beach in the title? I mean, like, sort of rhetorical question, but.
Oh, I'm sure. This is the thing where, like, I have the worst memory, and, like, this is, like, almost like a Jimmy Buffett trivia question.
It is, but
so I'm sure I will not be able to think of it right now, but I'm sure he has.
There aren't a lot of them. There aren't a lot of them, you know, really.
He's written like a million songs. So
I'm going to tell you, you're going to have to, after we hang up, you're going to go, we're going to, you know, go look in this. I think, you know,
if people are listening and you can think of any.
That's right.
Call or in. Send it to me.
You'll win a t-shirt.
Don't call in because this will not be recording anymore when you're listening, but you can leave a comment or something.
It's a great format to, you know, well, it's my preferred format. One of my favorite all-time favorite songwriters is a guy named Jerry Jeff Walker.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right. And so like this little bit of Jimmy Buffett trivia, obviously, you know, is that Jerry Jeff Walker and Jimmy Buffett, you know, were hanging out in Nashville for a while. And then they actually went to Austin. And so Jimmy Buffett's in Austin writing songs with Willie Nelson and Jerry Jeff Walker. And, you know, Jerry Jeff stays in the Texas Hill Country. And then Jimmy goes, you know, to the Keys, and the rest is sort of history. But, you know, they both sort of tell big stories, but they take you to a particular place. And the Keys and the islands are the sort of the scene that I want to be telling my stories, you know, from.
Yeah. I think you're not alone there. I think there's a pretty big crossover in people who are fans of Jimmy Buffett and also fans of Jerry Jeff Walker for sure. So.
Well, and they're great storytellers. The thing again about Jimmy or Jerry Jeff Walker is you can listen to one song and, you know, be laughing and the next song can almost make you cry. And it's just,
oh yeah,
I love that. I just love that. I love that.
Yeah. I love that. Like Jimmy, you know, it's like, if I'm feeling upbeat and like beachy, I can listen to certain albums. And if I'm feeling like mellow and maybe like even a little more melancholy, like there's album, like whole albums that you can listen to that are more sort of in that vibe.
Yeah.
There's just like something for every mood, I feel like.
Yeah.
That he has to offer.
So my goals in summary are write really good songs.
Uh-huh. Good goal.
Make really good music.
Also great goal.
Make possibly tens of dollars off of my music.
Yes.
Tens, maybe.
Tens of
hundreds.
That's like me on this podcast. Tens of dollars is how much money I will make.
Exactly. But I did sort of then, and we've talked a little bit about this sort of in our interactions. I do have this sort of science background and yes. Sort of in all seriousness. You know, my love for the Bahamas was, I mean, I worked at a biological field station and then I worked as a dive master. So, you know, the marine environment and just the amazingness of that part of the world is very near and dear to my heart. So I sort of have decided too along the way that if any of this music stuff gives me any kind of a platform, you know, one of the things I want to do is try to raise awareness about marine conservation issues and, you know, advocate for people taking action.
That's great. That's a cause that's very close to my heart as well. I do have some supporters who have chosen to support the podcast financially, and I truly, truly appreciate them. But part of that is that I have promised to donate part of what they're giving to support the podcast to conservation, like mostly ocean related conservation charities.
Right.
So that's really important to me as well.
Well, and I think it should be, I mean, you know, one of the things I studied birds. That was my PhD research. I studied, migrant songbirds in Puerto Rico in the wintertime. Yeah. So so I left my wife. Listen to this. I left my wife, who's from the Bahamas. At the time, we were living in Columbia, Missouri, which is, you know, the middle of – I mean, Columbia, Missouri is great, but, I mean, it's the middle of, you know, the Midwest. And so I studied songbirds in the wintertime. So I would fly to Puerto Rico in the wintertime. And leave
so
my wife. Exactly. My wife,
who is from the Bahamas.
Exactly.
You're like, sorry, honey, I'm off to Costa Rica.
Exactly. I mean, I'm telling you.
Well, I feel sorry for my wife.
I know, exactly. That's
I'd be like,
right.
Oh, no, you're not. I'm going too.
I know. It was horrible, really. I mean, I look back on it.
No, what? I'm sure it's fun, though.
I mean, but I studied birds. And birds are sort of, you know, easy to fall in love with. Lots of people like birds. But, you know, when you're trying to sort of promote conservation, sometimes the biggest hurdle can be to get people to care.
Right.
You know, enough about the cause. And what's sort of cool and exciting to me about, you know, connecting this kind of music with, you know, marine conservation is we already care. We already love islands, you know, beaches and oceans.
Right. I mean, it's not hard to get people to care about the ocean when they like drop rock.
Well, you know, but at the same time, sometimes, you know, there is a bit of a disconnect. You know, I have this song that I'm working on called Mother Ocean, and, you know, it's sort of, this idea that it's really pretty above, but what's going on below? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can look out at the ocean, and I used to do this. I still do this. I mean, you probably do this when you go to the coast or you're on an island or you sail and you've been to islands. And I mean, you can sit on a beach and look out at the ocean, and it's just so hard to believe that there's anything wrong
right.
anywhere on the planet, because everything just looks so peaceful. But yeah, you know, there's a lot, you know, going on under water, and, you know, a lot of it isn't So great. So yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple of there's definitely some big issues, and I guess what's sort of cool about marine conservation is that there are things I think that individuals can do to, you know, be helping, and, you know, to be, you know, a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's so many things you can do that don't require like giving money or anything. Like if you just focus on like your habits of like how much plastic you use. Like,
oh my gosh.
Like,
that's
been the big push for like not using straws. A lot of places and states are starting to adopt that more, like businesses that, you know, sell drinks and stuff. It's like there's plenty of things. Like if you feel like you don't have money to give to support charities or, you know, nonprofits and that kind of thing, especially like with ocean conservation, there is so much you can just do like yourself, just changing like your habits at home and how you live your life, that can help make a really big difference for sure.
So can I tell you, I got some bullet points here. I thought if we talked about this, and then these are some of the things that so exactly what you said was, of course you can contribute money to a worthwhile NGO. And I mean, and that's great. And there are a lot of them. And I guess personally, you know, my recommendation is, you know, the more local the NGO, the better. You know what I mean? So if there's like an island that you love, for me, it's the Bahamas, and there's a sort of their not-for-profit conservation organizations called the Bahamas National Trust. And they are amazing. They do great work, you know. So those, and if it, you know, if it was another island, you know, that you love, there's going to be people doing great work there. So that's in general. I mean, and I used to work for the Nature Conservancy, which is a huge, you know, not-for-profit conservation organization. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, contributing there, but oftentimes, you know, the more local, the better.
Especially if you want to make sure that your contribution goes to something specific or a specific place. Like the more local you get, the more you can really tailor who is receiving and using your money.
For sure. And then, you know, a little bit goes a long way when it hits, you know, when it hits the ground running, as opposed to, you know, going to some, you know, big headquarters in DC or something. So obviously you can contribute, but, you know, one of the things, and this obviously climate change is an issue, and you know, warming oceans is creating a lot of problems. But one of the things that if you listen to some of the, you know, the research people talking about what one of the problems is, one of the problems is that not enough people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always joke that, you know, I'm oftentimes not the most popular person at the party.
Because you're like, hey, have you heard about climate? Have you heard about like how things are going bad? And people are like, I just have a drink here, man.
I know. So, I mean, you don't want to be that person, but at
somebody
the same time,
to be that person, though.
Exactly.
People might not be happy about it, but like somebody,
yes,
needs to be the person that is willing to like speak up,
yes,
or like a little bit of a scene sometimes.
You know, you got to do it. And because, I mean, the planet, you know, Mother Ocean is it needs us, you know, she needs us. So, you know, like you said, I think that just becoming educated and having discussions about some of these issues is very important. One of the interesting things that I think folks might not know about, and I wanted to just talk about because I think you might be interested too, but the Monterey Bay Aquarium, okay, has been doing this. They've had this checklist for sustainable seafood. Because one of the ways that we can drive, you know, some of the problems, even if we don't live by the coast, is we're eating, potentially, you know, creating a demand for seafood that's being over harvested. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's this seafoodwatch.org. If a person went to that, they can literally go and look at their state. So I actually pulled up Arizona. And it will give you, you know, recommendations, your best choices for seafood, you know, if you live in Arizona, for, you know, sort of seasonally, because there's just certain things we should all be avoiding because we don't want to create, you know, a demand for this stuff that's already being overharvested. So, you know,
especially in Arizona, like we have no ocean near us. So like any seafood is kind of not to say that it's like bad or whatever. I'm actually vegetarian, so I don't eat any seafood or meat. But yeah, definitely. I follow the aquarium on Instagram, and I think I've actually seen that post about that before. And if I did eat meat, I would definitely be using that because like overfishing and things like that are really serious issues for like the balance of the marine environment.
Yes.
So I'm glad you brought that up, and people should definitely go check it out for sure if they are seafood lovers.
Yeah. Because again, I mean, I most people don't, you know, aren't trying to be a part of the problem, but the reality is, and sometimes my wife, again, I mean, I, you know, you got to feel sorry for my wife sometimes living with me, I think, but, you know, she'll be like, golly, you know, what can we do that's not harming the planet, you know, because I'm this guy that always says, well, you know, I was like, where did those, you know, where did that grapefruit come from? Or where did those grapes come from? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, Monique, they came from Chile. Chile. I mean, can you imagine, you know? So she's like, oh my gosh. So it is, I mean, you know, it can get a little bit tiresome sometimes. I mean, but at the same time, you know, I mean, if we want this stuff to not just be pretty above, but we, you know, if we want to put on a mask and a snorkel and some fins and jump in and have there be things other than plastic down there, we need to, gosh, we know we got to do our part. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So I do think that, I think that an opportunity exists, you know, the parrot heads in paradise. And I was listening to, you know, your, like I said, your podcast with Bill Brehm. I mean, there's 22,000 members and y'all raised, you know, $3.5 million for charity. I think, you know, in 2018 or something, and there's lots of volunteer hours and, you know, there's opportunities. So I just want to, like I said, one of the things that I want to do, is, you know, be at least, to some extent, that guy that sort of brings that stuff up. And, you know, it's not, you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a jerk or a complete bummer, but,
right,
you know, our, you know, actions have consequences and, you know, just so, yeah. So, well, I'm glad that you are a fan of the idea of, you know, being a good steward of the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, that's like one of the things on this podcast is I want to, obviously like ocean related stuff is especially close to my heart, just because like I love the ocean stuff, but even just like giving back in lots of ways to different things. And I want to, you know, do some interviews with sort of relevant nonprofits and that kind of thing. Yeah. And I have been doing that. And so I'd like to keep, so yeah, this podcast is, even though it's mostly about escapism, it's also a little bit about helping bring awareness to things and helping people find ways to give back, I guess, because that is something that most parrot heads really care about because it's a big part of the parrot head lifestyle and being in the club and all of that. So I really appreciate that you are very much for that as well. And that you're using your musical platform to bring awareness, like even have a song, the Life's a Beach song, right? That's like a fun little song that's like, hey, like we need to get it together. And
yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, I did that for Earth Day a couple years ago, and I got a little group of kids from the local grade school environmental club and Life's a Beach, So Keep It Clean. And they sang, you know, in the chorus, and, You know, one of the things that is exciting to me, you know, is how excited young people are about, you know, saving the turtles and, you know, rescue the reef. And, you know, as a person who's older, you know, needless to say, it motivates me to do my part to keep it nice for them. But it's you know, it's exciting that they, when you, you know, that's why I like to hang around with kids. I mean, you know, they're just so hopeful. But yeah, so it's important, needless to say. I love the idea of, I even came up with the name of a little subcommittee that PHIP could have. It's called Paired Heads for Coral Heads.
That's cute.
But anyway, well, you know, yeah, I want to keep talking about this, and I love that you're using your, you know, platform to, you know, remind people and raise awareness. So good job.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really appreciate you coming on to talk about not just your music, but like this kind of conservation stuff as well. I love it when I have guests that, you know, have like, obviously like the music is a big part of this podcast and it's a big part of being a parrot head, but I love it when guests have other passions and things that they want to talk about that I think my listeners would also be interested in, hopefully will be interested in and feel strongly about too. So, so I really appreciate you coming on to talk about all of that. And, before we go, where can the people find you, like social media handles, or you already kind of talked about where they can hear your music, but if they just want to sort of follow along with what you're up to.
Right. Well, you know, I have an Instagram, page just at Michael Eric Music. And, I mean, if a person Googled, you know, Michael Eric and then, you know, Mile Zero or Boat Dreams or any of my song titles, you know, they could find me. That site, misfitpirate.hearnow.com. That, like I said, that's sort of a one page website that'll take you for my CD Mile Zero. Yeah. And you can listen to the music there. You know, like I said, if you, hopefully, you'll love it.
Yes.
And,
you'll love it.
Because I love making it. And, like I said, I'm one of my biggest fans. So, you know, that's so, hopefully someone will be there. My second biggest fan after my mom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's good when your mom is a big fan. Cause I feel like some people, their moms are not their biggest fan. And like, that's kind of sad.
It is sad, but you know, who's my toughest critic. So, you know, you do these songs and, you know, my poor wife, again, everybody's listening is like, oh my gosh, this guy's wife just puts up with so much. But, you know, I'll be like, hey, Monique, her name is Monique. I'm like, hey, Monique, wait, you want to listen to this? And she'll be like, okay. And she'll listen to it, and she is brutal sometimes. Like on these demos, you know, she'll be like, "I don't like this, I don't like that." Which, of course, is great because you don't want to, you don't want a bunch of yes men and women in your camp.
Right. You need someone that's going to be like, "Listen, this needs to change.
Exactly.
This part is bad." Cause you don't want, you don't just want everyone to coddle you. Cause then you're just like putting out, you could be just putting out garbage and nobody would be saying anything. So
now did you ever watch, American Idol?
Yes.
Did you like
back
that?
In
okay.
The day.
Exactly. Okay. So I liked it too, but my favorite part was the auditions, right?
Right.
And so what was crazy to me is when they'd have these auditions and these people were really bad, but they thought they were good.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, you know, like, do they really not know they're bad? And do their friends really tell them that they're good? Because they're obviously they can't sing. So, you need those people. You know, they make you better. But
yes.
But you can imagine, like I said, with my wife just giving me a hard time, I was so nervous to put out Boat Dreams, but it's all turned out pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say so. You have an album now. You've been on various radio stations, and it seems to have done really well. And hopefully more people, after listening to this episode, will check out your music if they haven't heard it already, and check out your social medias and follow you. Because definitely, like, when we have new voices in trap rock, like, we want to make sure we're checking them out and including them, because that's the only way the genre is going to grow. I think that's really great. And I really appreciate you, taking the time to be on the podcast and talk about, your music and, all important things like ocean conservation. Yay.
Exactly. Save the whale.
Yeah. Save the classic, save the whales. So thanks so much. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you for what you're doing. When I first heard your podcast, I reached out to you because I just loved your passion and your just unbridled love of the music. And it was contagious. And so,
yeah, I'm a nerd. It's true.
I love it. I love passion. I mean, I love passion in people, and you've obviously got it. So thank you for having me on. And, I'll have another CD coming out in, the plan is to have it come out in February called Misfit Pirate.
Okay,
great. Yeah. So I'll get it to you, and, hopefully we can talk some more.
All right. That sounds good. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Aaliyah.
All right. Well, that was, an awesome interview. It was really fun to talk to him and get to talk about, conservation and that kind of thing, which, like I said, it's important to me. So hopefully in the future, I'll maybe have some more guests that either want to talk about that or are from specific nonprofits or organizations that work in that area. And yeah, I hope you'll go check out his music. like we said, it's good to have new people coming in, to sort of expand the genre, new blood and all that. So thank you so much to him for being on, and being willing to talk about all of the things, not just the like, yay, fun stuff, but also the important stuff. Cause that is also what I want this podcast to be. I mean, obviously I want it to be fun. And hopefully it is, but also, like I said, a big part of being a parrothead is giving back. So I want that to be a part of the podcast as well. So yeah, that is it for this week. If you want to, once again, if you have comments or anything you want to say to me, please, nice things. No, I mean like constructive feedback is welcome as well. But if you're just like, hey, you suck, like don't email me that. But you can email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com or follow me on social media at blamebuffettpod on Twitter and Instagram. And you can search for Blame It on Buffett Podcast on Facebook. Thank you to people who have left a review on Apple Podcasts. I really appreciate that. It really helps with getting more views and that kind of thing, or I guess listens in this case. If you're listening on Apple, if you wouldn't mind, if you're enjoying the show and you want to leave a review, you can just do a star review, or if you want to leave a comment, that's awesome too. I really appreciate that. And I don't know if the other platforms have that kind of system, but if they do, go for it. Just throw it out there. I love to hear what you guys think about the podcast. Share it with your friends if you think they'd like it. Word of mouth has kind of, I think, been the way that this podcast has grown so far. So hopefully that will continue to be the case. And I hope everyone out there is doing well and still hanging in with everything that's going on right now. I'm still at home. And probably will be for a while, working from home and all that. So, hope everyone is doing well. And until next time, if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen out there.
Blame it on Buffett. He was my hero from way in the past. And I sang his songs and had island dreams before I ever read the man up a mask. Blame it on Buffett. We took the road.
beat me.